Chapter 145. No, Tom. But still I know, apostrophe she added timidly, that this is a sorrow to you in your own better way. Apostrophe, Tom thought of disputing the position. But it would have been mere folly, and he gave it up. My dear, apostrophe said Tom, I will repay your affection with the truth and all the truth. It is a sorrow to me. I have proved it to be so sometimes, though I have always striven against it. But somebody who is precious to you may die, and you may dream that you are in heaven with the departed spirit, and you may find it a sorrow to wake to the life on earth, which is no harder to be borne than when you fell asleep. It is sorrowful to me to contemplate my dream, which I always knew was a dream, even when it first presented itself. But the realities about me are not to blame. They are the same as they were. My sister, my sweet companion, who makes this place so dear, is she less devoted to me, Ruth, than she would have been if this vision had never troubled me? My old friend John, who might so easily have treated me with coldness and neglect, is he less cordial to me? The world about me, is there less good in that? Are my words to be harsh, and my looks to be sour, and is my heart to grow cold, because there has fallen in my way a good and beautiful creature, who but for the selfish regret that I cannot call her my own, would, like all other good and beautiful creatures, make me happier and better? No, my dear sister. No, apostrophe said Tom stoutly. Remembering all my means of happiness, I hardly dare to call this lurking something a sorrow, but whatever name it may justly bear, I thank heaven that it renders me more sensible of affection and attachment, and softens me in 50 ways. Not less happy. Not less happy, Ruth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she could not speak to him, but she loved him, as he well deserved. Even as he deserved, she loved him. She will open Martin's eyes, apostrophe said Tom, with a glow of pride, and that which is indeed wrong, will be set right. Nothing will persuade her, I know, that I have betrayed him. It will be set right through her, and he will be very sorry for it. Our secret, Ruth, is our own, and lives and dies with us. I don't believe I ever could have told it you, apostrophe said Tom, with a smile, but how glad I am to think you have found it out. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they had never taken such a pleasant walk as they took that night. Tom told her all so freely and so simply, and was so desirous to return her tenderness with his fullest confidence, that they prolonged it far beyond their usual hour, and sat up late when they came home. And when they parted for the night there was such a tranquil, beautiful expression in Tom's face, that she could not bear to shut it out, but going back on tiptoe to his chamber door, looked in and stood there till he saw her, and then embracing him again, withdrew. And in her prayers and in her sleep good times to be remembered with such fervor, Tom, his name was uppermost. When he was left alone, Tom pondered very much on this discovery of hers, and greatly wondered what had led her to it. Because, apostrophe thought Tom, I have been so very careful. It was foolish and unnecessary in me, as I clearly see now, when I am so relieved by her knowing it, but I have been so very careful to conceal it from her. Of course I knew that she was intelligent and quick, and for that reason was more upon my guard, but I was not in the least prepared for this. I am sure her discovery has been sudden too. Dear me. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tom. It's a most singular instance of penetration. Apostrophe, Tom could not get it out of his head. There it was, when his head was on his pillow. How she trembled when she began to tell me she knew it. Apostrophe, apostrophe thought Tom, recalling all the little incidents and circumstances, and how her face flushed. But that was natural. Oh, quite natural. That needs no accounting for. Apostrophe, Tom little thought how natural it was. Tom little knew that there was that in Ruth's own heart, but newly set there, which had helped her to the reading of his mystery. Ah, Tom. He didn't understand the whispers of the temple fountain, though he passed it every day. Who so lively and cheerful as busy Ruth next morning? Her early tap at Tom's door, and her light foot outside, would have been music to him, though she had not spoken. But she said it was the brightest morning ever seen, and so it was, and if it had been otherwise, she would have made it so to Tom. She was ready with his neat breakfast when he went downstairs, and had her bonnet ready for the early walk, and was so full of news, that Tom was lost in wonder. She might have been up all night, collecting it for his entertainment. There was Mr. Nadgett not come home yet, and there was bread down a penny a loaf, and there was twice as much strength in this tea as in the last, and the milkwoman's husband had come out of the hospital cured, and the curly-headed child over the way had been lost all yesterday, and she was going to make all sorts of preserves in a desperate hurry, and there happened to be a saucepan in the house which was the very saucepan for the purpose. And she knew all about the last book Tom had brought home, all through, though it was a teaser to read. And she had so much to tell him, that she had finished breakfast first. Then she had her little bonnet on, and the tea and sugar locked up, and the keys in her reticule, and the flower, as usual, in Tom's coat, and was in all respects quite ready to accompany him, before Tom knew she had begun to prepare. And in short, as Tom said, with a confidence in his own assertion which amounted to a defiance of the public in general, there never was such a little woman. She made Tom talkative. It was impossible to resist her. She put such enticing questions to him, about books, and about dates of churches, and about organs, and about the temple, and about all kinds of things. Indeed, she lightened the way and Tom's heart with it, to that degree, that the temple looked quite blank and solitary, when he parted from her at the gate. "No Mr. Phipps' friend today, I suppose," apostrophe thought Tom, as he ascended the stairs. Not yet, at any rate, for the door was closed as usual, and Tom opened it with his key. He had got the books into perfect order now, and had mended the torn leaves, and had pasted up the broken backs, and substituted neat labels for the worn-out letterings. It looked a different place, it was so orderly and neat. Tom felt some pride in contemplating the change he had wrought, though there was no one to approve or disapprove of it. He was at present occupied in making a fair copy of his draft of the catalogue, on which, as there was no hurry, he was painfully concentrating all the ingenious and laborious neatness he had ever expended on map or plan in Mr. Pecksniff's workroom. It was a very marvel of a catalogue, for Tom sometimes thought he was really getting his money too easily, and he had determined within himself that this document should take a little of his superfluous leisure out of him. So with pens and ruler, and compasses and india rubber, and pencil, and black ink, and red ink, Tom worked away all the morning. He thought a good deal about Martin, and their interview of yesterday, and would have been far easier in his mind, if he could have resolved to confide it to his friend John, and to have taken his opinion on the subject. But besides that he knew what John's boiling indignation would be, he bethought himself that he was helping Martin now in a matter of great moment, and that to deprive the latter of his assistance at such a crisis of affairs would be to inflict a serious injury upon him. "So I'll keep it to myself," apostrophe said Tom, with a sigh. "I'll keep it to myself." Apostrophe, and to work he went again, more assiduously than ever, with the pens, and the ruler, and the india rubber, and the pencils, and the red ink, that he might forget it. He had labored away another hour more, when he heard a footstep in the entry, down below. "Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Tom, looking towards the door. "Time was, not long ago either, when that would have set me wondering and expecting. But I have left off now." Apostrophe, the footstep came on, up the stairs. 36, 37, 38, apostrophe said Tom, counting. "Now you'll stop. Nobody ever comes past the 38th stair." Apostrophe, the person did, certainly, but only to take breath, for up the footstep came again. 40, 41, 42, and so on. The door stood open. As the tread advanced, Tom looked impatiently and eagerly towards it. When a figure came upon the landing, and arriving in the doorway, stopped and gazed at him, he rose up from his chair, and half believed he saw a spirit. Old Martin Chuzzlewit. The same whom he had left at Mr. Pecksniff's, weak and sinking. The same? No, not the same, for this old man, though old, was strong, and leaned upon his stick with a vigorous hand, while with the other he signed to Tom to make no noise. One glance at the resolute face, the watchful eye, the vigorous hand upon the staff, the triumphant purpose in the figure, and such a light broke in on Tom as blinded him. You have expected me, apostrophe said Martin, a long time. Apostrophe, I was told, that my employer would arrive soon, apostrophe said Tom, but apostrophe, I know. You were ignorant who he was. It was my desire. I am glad it has been so well observed. I intended to have been with you much sooner. I thought the time had come. I thought I could know no more, and no worse, of him, than I did on that day, when I saw you last. But I was wrong. Apostrophe, he had by this time come up to Tom, and now he grasped his hand. I have lived in his house, Pinch, and had him fawning on me days and weeks and months. You know it. I have suffered him to treat me like his tool and instrument. You know it. You have seen me there. I have undergone 10,000 times as much as I could have endured if I had been the miserable weak old man he took me for. You know it. I have seen him offer love to Mary. You know it. Who better, my true heart. I have had his base soul bare before me, day by day, and have not betrayed myself once. I never could have undergone such torture, but for looking forward to this time. Apostrophe, he stopped, even in the passion of his speech, if that can be called passion which was so resolute and steady to press Tom's hand again. Then he said, in great excitement, close the door. He will not be long after me, but may come too soon. The time now drawing on, apostrophe said the old man, hurriedly his eyes and whole face brightening as he spoke, will make amends for all. I wouldn't have him die or hang himself, for millions of golden pieces. Close the door. Apostrophe, Tom did so, hardly knowing yet whether he was awake, or in a dream. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.